happens now while you still get the chance.
Or what?
Almost solid bravado, but the new uncertainty made it slippery at base. Twice he'd prepped himself for what he thought was coming, and twice he'd had his assumptions cut out from under him. The fear in him was fume-thin, but rising. I shrugged. Or I'll leave you here.
What?
I'll leave you here. I mean, we're out in the middle of the Charaset Wasting, some abandoned dig town. I don't think it even has a name. And even 1,000 kilometers of desert in every direction. I'm just going to leave you plugged in. He blinked, trying to assimilate the angle. I leaned in again. You're in a casualty ID&A system. Runs off a battlefield power pack. It's probably good for decades in these settings. Hundreds of years virtual time. Which is going to seem pretty fucking real to you sitting in here watching the wheat grow. If it grows in a format this basic. You won't get hungry here, you won't get thirsty, but I'm willing to bet you'll go insane before the first century's out. I sat back again, let it sink into him. Or you can answer my questions. One-time offer. What's it going to be? The silence built, but it was a different kind this time. I let him stare me out for a minute, then shrugged and got to my feet. You had your chance. I got almost to the door before he cracked.
All right!
There was a sound like piano wire snapping in his voice.
All right, you've got it, you got it.
I paused, then reached for the door handle. His voice scaled up.
I said, you got it, man. Hand, man, hand. Matthias Hand. He's the man. He sent us. Fucking stop, man, I'll tell you.
Hand. The name he'd blurted earlier. Safe to bet he'd cracked for real. I turned slowly back from the door. Hand? He nodded jerkily. Matthias Hand? He looked up, something broken in his face.
I got your word?
For what it's worth, yeah. Your stack goes back to Mandrake intact. Now, Hand.
Matthias Hand, Acquisitions Division.
He's your controller? I frowned. A divisional exec?
He's not really my controller. All the tactical squads report to the Chief of Secure Operations, but since the war they've had 75 TAC operatives seconded directly to Hand at acquisitions.
Why?
How the fuck would I know?
Speculate a little. Was it Hand's initiative or general policy? He hesitated.
They say it was Hand.
How long's he been with Mandrake?
I don't know.
He saw the expression on my face.
I don't fucking know! Longer than me.
What's his rep?
Tough. You don't cross him.
Yeah. Him and every other corporate exec above departmental head. They're all such tough motherfuckers. Tell me something I can't already guess.
It isn't just talk. 2 years ago, some project manager in R&D had Hand up in front of the policy board for breach of company ethics.
Company what?
Yeah, you can laugh. At Mandrake, that's an erasure penalty if it sticks.
But it didn't. Deng shook his head.
Hand squared it with the board. No one knows how. And 2 weeks later, this guy turns up dead in the back of a taxi, looking like something exploded inside him. They say Hand used to be a Haugan in the Carrefour Brotherhood on Latimer. All that voodoo shit.
All that voodoo shit, I repeated, not quite as unimpressed as I was playing it. Religion is religion, however you wrap it. And like Quell says, a preoccupation with the next world pretty clearly signals an inability to cope credibly with this one. Still, the Carrefour Brotherhood were as nasty a bunch of extortionists as I'd ever run across in a tour of human misery that took in, among other highlights, the Harlan's World Yakuza, the Sharyan Religious Police, and of course the Envoy Corps itself. If Matthias Hand was ex-Carrefour, he'd be stained a deeper, darker shade than the average corporate enforcer. So apart from all that voodoo shit, what else do they say about him? Deng shrugged.
That he's smart. Acquisitions muscled in on a lot of government contracts just before the war. Stuff the majors weren't even looking at. The word is, Hans telling the policy board it'll have a seat on the cartel by this time next year. And no one I know's laughing at that.
Yeah. Too much danger of a career change, decorating the inside of taxis with your guts. I think we'll... Falling. Leaving the ID&A format turned out to be about as much fun as coming in. I felt as if a trap door had opened in the floor under my chair and dropped me down a hole drilled right through the planet. The sea of static slithered in from all sides, eating up the darkness with a hungry crackling and bursting against my combined senses like an instant empathin hangover. Then it was gone, leached out and sucking away just as unpleasantly, and I was reality aware again, head down, and a tiny string of saliva drooling from one corner of my mouth.
You okay, Kovach?
Schneider. I blinked. The air around me seemed unreasonably twilight after the static rush, as if I'd been staring into the sun for too long.
Kovach?
This time it was Tanya Ordani's voice. I wiped my mouth and looked around. Beside me, the ID&A set was humming quietly, the glowing green counter numerals frozen at 49. Wardani and Schneider stood on either side of the set, peering at me with almost comical concern. Behind them, the resin-molded tawdriness of the whoring chamber lent the whole thing an air of badly staged farce. I could feel myself starting to smirk as I reached up and removed the skullcap.
Well?
Wardani drew back a little.
Don't just sit there grinning. What did you get?
Enough, I said. I think we're ready to deal now. Part 2. Commercial Considerations. In any agenda, political or otherwise, there's a cost to be borne. Always ask what it is and who will be paying. If you don't, then the agenda makers will pick up the perfume of your silence like swamp panthers on the scent of blood, and the next thing you know, the person expected to bear the cost will be you. And you may not have what it takes to pay. Quellcrist Falconer. Things I Should Have Learned By Now. Volume 2. Chapter 9.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
The auctioneer tapped a finger delicately onto the bulb of her no-hands mic, and the sound frub-frubbed through the vaulted space over our heads like muffled thunder. In keeping with tradition, she was attired, minus helmet and gloves, in a vacuum suit of sorts, but it was molded along lines that reminded me more of the fashion houses on New Beijing than a Mars exploratory dig. Her voice was sweet, warm coffee laced with overproof rum.
Lot 27, from the Lower Danang Field, recent excavation, 3-meter pylon with laser-engraved technoglyph base. Opening offer is a 200,000 saft.
Somehow I don't think so. Matthias' hand sipped at his tea and glanced idly up to where the artifact turned in holographic magnification just beyond the edge of the clearing balcony. Not today, and not with that bloody great fissure running through the second glyph.
Well, you never know, I said easily. No telling what kind of idiots are wandering around with too much money in a place like this.
Oh, quite. He twisted slightly in his seat, as if scanning the loosely knotted crowd of potential buyers scattered around the balcony. But I really think you'll see this piece go for rather less than 120.
If you say so.
I do. An urbane smile faded in and then out across the chiseled Caucasian planes of his face. He was, like most corporate execs, tall and forgettably good-looking. Of course, I have been wrong in the past. Occasionally.
Ah, good, this looks like ours.
The food arrived, dispensed by a waiter on whom had been inflicted a cheaper and less well-cut version of the auctioneer's suit. He unloaded our order with remarkable grace, considering. We both waited in silence while he did it, and then watched him out of sight with symmetrical caution.
Not one of yours? I asked.
Hardly. Han prodded doubtfully at the contents of the bento tray with his chopsticks. You know, you might have picked another cuisine. I mean, there's a war on, and we are over 1,000 kilometers from the nearest ocean. Do you really think sushi was such a good idea?
I'm from Harlan's world. It's what we eat there.
Both of us were ignoring the fact that the sushi bar was slap in the middle of the clearing balcony, exposed to sniper view from positions all over the auction house's airy interior. In one such position, Jan Schneider was at that moment huddled up with a snub-barrel, hooded-discharge laser carbine, looking down a sniper scope at Matthias Hand's face. I didn't know how many other men and women might be in the house doing the same thing to me. Up on the holodisplay over our heads, the opening price slithered in warm orange numerals, down past 150, and unchecked by the imploring tones of the auctioneer. Hand nodded toward the figure. There you are. The corrosion begins. He started to eat. Shall we get down to business, then? Fair enough. I tossed something across the table to him. That's yours, I think. It rolled on the surface until he stopped it with his free hand. He picked it up between a well-manicured finger and thumb and looked at it quizzically. Ding. I nodded. What did you get out of him? Not much. No time with a virtual tray set to blow on activation. You know that. I shrugged. He dropped your name before he realized I wasn't a Mandrake psychosurgeon, but after that he pretty much clammed up. Tough little motherfucker. Han's expression turned skeptical, but he dropped the cortical stack into the breast pocket of his suit without further comment. He chewed slowly through another mouthful of sashimi. Did you really have to shoot them all? He asked finally. I shrugged. That's the way we do things up north these days. Maybe you haven't heard. There's a war on. Ah, yes. He seemed to notice my uniform for the first time. So you're in the wedge. I wonder, how would Isaac Carrera react to news of your incursions into landfall, do you suppose? I shrugged again. Wedge officers get a lot of latitude. It might be a little tricky to explain, but I can always tell him I was undercover, following up a strategic initiative. And you are? No, this is strictly personal. And what if I've recorded this and I play it back to him? Well, if I'm undercover, I have to tell you something to maintain that cover, don't I? That would make this conversation a double bluff, wouldn't it? There was a pause while we looked impassively at each other across the table, and then another smile spread slowly onto the Mandrake executive's face. This one stayed longer and was unmanufactured, I thought. Yes, he murmured. That is so very elegant. Congratulations, Lieutenant. It's so watertight, I don't know what to believe myself. You could be working for the Wedge, for all I know. Yes, I could, I smiled back. But you know what? You don't have time to worry about that. Because the same data you received yesterday is in lockdown launch configuration at 50 places in the landfall data flow. Pre-programmed for high-impact delivery into every corporate stack in the cartel. And the clock is running. You've got about a month to put this together. After that, well, all your heavyweight competitors will know what you know, and a certain stretch of coastline is going to look like Touchdown Boulevard on New Year's Eve. Be quiet. Han's voice stayed gentle, but there was a sudden spike of steel under the suave tones. We're in the open here. If you want to do business with Mandrake, you're going to have to learn a little discretion. No more specifics, please. Fine. Just as long as we understand each other. I think we do. I hope so. I let my own tone harden a little. You underestimated me when you sent the goon squad out last night. Don't do it again. I wouldn't dream. That's good. Don't even dream about it, Han. Because what happened to Deng and his pals last night doesn't come close to some of the unpleasantries I've been party to in the last 18 months up north. You may think the war's a long way off right now, but if Mandrake tries to shaft me or my associates again, you'll have a Wedge wake-up call rammed so far up your ass you'll be able to taste your own shit in the back of your throat. Now, do we understand each other? Hand made a pained face. Yes, you've made your point very graphically. I assure you there will be no more attempts to cut you out of the loop. That's provided your demands are reasonable, of course. What kind of finder's fee were you looking for? $20 million. And don't look at me like that, Hand. It's not even a tenth of 1% of what Mandrake stands to make from this, if we're successful. Up on the hollow, the asking price seemed to have braked at 109, and the auctioneer was now coaxing it upward a fraction at a time. Hand chewed and swallowed while he thought about it. Cash on delivery? No. Up front. On deposit in a Latimer City bank. One-way transfer, standard 7-hour reversibility limit. I'll give you the account codes later. That's presumptuous, Lieutenant. Call it insurance. Not that I don't trust your hand, but I'll feel happier knowing you've already made the payment. That way there's no percentage in Mandrake fucking me over after the event. You don't stand to gain anything from it. The Mandrake exec grinned wolfishly. Trust works both ways, Lieutenant. Why should we pay you before the project matures? Other than because if you don't, I'll walk away from this table and you'll lose the biggest R&D coup the Protectorate has ever seen, you mean? I let that sink in for a moment before I hit him with a relaxant. Well, look at it this way. I can't access the money from here as long as the war's on. The Emergency Powers Directive ensures that. So your money's gone, but I don't have it either. To get paid, I have to be on Latimer. That's your guarantee. You want to go to Latimer as well? Hand raised an eyebrow. 20 million UN and passage off-world. Don't be obtuse, Hand. What did you expect? You think I want to wait around until Camp and the cartel finally decide it's time to negotiate instead of fight? I don't have that kind of patience. So, the Mandrake exec set down his chopsticks and steepled his hands on the table. Let me see if I've got this straight. We pay you 20 million UN dollars now. That's non-negotiable. I looked back at him, waiting. Is that right? Don't worry. I'll stop you if you get off track. The faint there-and-gone smile again. Thank you. Then, upon successful completion of this project, we undertake to freight you, and presumably your associates, by needlecast to Latimer. Are those all of your demands? Plus decanting. Hand looked at me strangely. I guessed he wasn't used to his negotiations taking this path. Plus decanting. Any specifics I should know about there? I shrugged. Selected sleeves, obviously, but we can discuss the specifics later. Doesn't have to be custom. Something top of the range, obviously, but off the rack will do fine. Oh, good. I felt a grin floating up, tickling the inner surfaces of my belly. I let it surface. Come on, Hand. You're getting a fucking bargain, and you know it. So you say. But it isn't that simple, Lieutenant. We've checked the landfall artifact registry for the past 5 years, and there's no trace of anything like the item you describe. He spread his hands. No evidence. You can see my position. Yeah, I can. In about 2 minutes, you're about to lose the biggest archaeological coup of the past 500 years, and you're going to do it because there's nothing in your files about it. If that's your position, Hand, I'm dealing with the wrong people. Are you saying this find went unregistered? In direct breach of the charter? I'm saying it doesn't matter. I'm saying what we sent you looked real enough for either you or your pet AI to authorize a full urban commando strike inside half an hour. Maybe the files got wiped. Maybe they were corrupted or stolen. Why am I even discussing this? Are you going to pay us or are you going to walk? Silence. He was pretty good. I still couldn't tell which way he was going to jump. He hadn't shown me a single genuine emotion since we sat down. I waited. He sat back and brushed something invisible from his lap. I'm afraid this will require some consultation with my colleagues. I'm not authorized to sign off on deals of this magnitude, with this little up front. Authorization for the DHF needle casting alone will need... Crap. I kept it friendly. But go ahead. Consult. I can give you half an hour. Half an hour. Fear. The tiniest flicker of it at the narrowed corners of his eyes. But it was there, and I felt the satisfaction come surging up from my stomach in the wake of the grin. Savage with nearly 2 years of suppressed rage. Got you, motherfucker. Sure. 30 minutes. I'll be right here. I hear the green tea sorbet is pretty good in this place. You're not serious. I let the savagery corrode the edge of my voice. Sure I'm serious. I warned you about that. Don't underestimate me again, Hand. You get me a decision inside 30 minutes, or I walk out of here and go talk to someone else. I might even stiff you with a bill. He jerked his head irritably. And who would you go to? Seth Akarnew? PKN? I gestured with my chopsticks. Who knows? But I wouldn't worry about it. I'll work something out. You'll be busy enough trying to explain to the policy board how you let this slip through your fingers. Won't you? Matthias Hand compressed a breath and got up. He sorted out a thin smile and flashed it at me. Very well. I'll be back shortly. But you have a little to learn about the art of negotiation, Lieutenant Kovac. Probably. Like I said, I've spent a lot of time up north. I watched him walk away between the potential buyers on the balcony and could not repress a faint shiver. If I was going to get my face lasered off, there was a good chance it would happen now. I was banking hard on an intuition that Han had license from the policy board to do pretty much what he wanted. Mandrake was the commercial world's equivalent of Carrera's Wedge, and you had to assume a corresponding approach to latitudes of initiative at executive levels. There was really no other way for a cutting-edge organism to work. Don't expect anything, and you'll be ready for it. In core-approved fashion, I stayed in surface neutral, defocused, but underneath it all, I could feel my mind worrying at the details like a rat. 20 million wasn't much in corporate terms, not for a guaranteed outcome like the one I was sketching for Mandrake, and hopefully I'd committed enough mayhem the night before to make them wary of risking another grab at the goods without paying. I was pushing hard, but it was all stacked up to fall in the desired direction. It made sense for them to pay us out. Right, Takashi? My face twitched. If my much-vaunted envoy intuition was wrong, if Mandrake execs were leashed tighter than I thought, and if Han couldn't get a green light for cooperation, he might just decide to try smash-and-grab after all, starting with my death and subsequent re-sleeving in an interrogation construct. And if Mandrake's assumed snipers took me down now, there wasn't much Schneider and Wardoni could do but fall back and hide. Don't expect anything, and they wouldn't be able to hide for long. Not from someone like Hand. Don't... Envoy Serenity was getting hard to come by on Sanction 4. This fucking war. And then, Matthias Hand was there, threading his way back through the crowd, with a faint smile on his lips and decision written into the lines of his stride as if he were marketing the stuff. Above his head, the Martian pylon turned and hollow, orange numerals flaring to a halt, and then... to the red of arterial spray. Shutdown colors. 123,700 Saft. Sold. Chapter 10. Dangrek. The coast huddled inward from a chilly gray sea, weathered granite hills thinly clothed with low-growing vegetation and a few patches of forest. It was clothing that the landscape started shrugging off in favor of lichen and bare rock as soon as height permitted. Less than 10 kilometers inland, the bones of the land showed clean in the tumbled peaks and gullies of the ancient mountain range that was Dangrek's spine. Late afternoon sunlight speared in through shreds of cloud caught on the few remaining teeth the landscape owned and turned the sea to dirty mercury. A thin breeze swept in off the ocean and buffeted good-naturedly across our faces. Schneider glanced down at his ungoose-fleshed arms and frowned. He was wearing the Lapinay T-shirt he'd gotten up in that morning, and no jacket. "Should be colder than this," he said. "Should be covered in little bits of dead wedge commandos as well, Jan." I wandered past him to where Matthias Hand stood with his hands in the pockets of his board meeting suit, looking up at the sky as if he expected rain. "This is from stock, right? A stored construct, no real-time update?"
"Not as yet." Han dropped his gaze to meet my eye. "Actually, it's something we've worked up from military AI projections. The climate protocols aren't in yet. It's still quite crude, but for locational purposes..."
He turned expectantly to Tanya Wardani, who was staring off across the rough grass hillscape in the opposite direction. She nodded without looking around at us.
"It'll do,"
she said distantly.
"I guess an MAI won't have missed much."
"Then you'll be able to show us what we're looking for, presumably."
A long, turned-out pause, and I wondered if the fast-load therapy I'd done on Wardani might be coming apart at the seams. Then the archaeologue turned about.
"Yes."
Another pause.
"Of course. This way."
She set out across the side of the hill with what seemed like overlong strides, coat flapping in the breeze. I exchanged a glance with Hand, who shrugged his immaculately tailored shoulders and made an elegant after-you gesture with one hand. Schneider had already started out after the archaeologue, so we fell in behind. I let Hand take the lead and stayed back, watching amused as he slipped on the gradient in his unsuitable boardroom shoes. 100 meters ahead, Wardani had found a narrow path worn by some grazing animal and was following it down toward the shore. The breeze kept pace across the hillside,
stirring the long grass and making the stiff-petaled heads of spider-rose nod in dreamy acquiescence. Overhead, the cloud cover seemed to be breaking up on a backdrop of quiet gray. I was having a hard time reconciling it all with the last time I'd been up on the northern rim. It was the same landscape for 1,000 kilometers in either direction along the coast, but I remembered it slick with blood and fluids from the hydraulic systems of murdered war machines. I remembered raw granite wounds torn in the hills, shrapnel and scorched grass, and the scything blast of charged particle guns from the sky. I remembered screaming. We crested the last row of hills before the shore and stood looking down on a coastline of jutting rock promontories, tilted into the sea like sinking aircraft carriers. Between these wrenched fingers of land, gleaming turquoise sand caught the light in a succession of small, shallow bays. Farther out, small islets and reefs broke the surface in places, and the coast swept out and around to the east, where I stopped and narrowed my eyes. On the eastern edge of the long coastal sweep, the virtuality's fabric seemed to be wearing through, revealing a patch of gray unfocus that looked like old steel wool. At irregular intervals, a dim red glow lit the gray from within.
"Han, what's that?"
"That?"
He saw where I was pointing.
"Oh, that. Gray area. I can see that."
Now Wardani and Schneider had both stopped to peer along the line of my raised arm. "What's it doing there?"
But some part of me, recently steeped in the dark and spiderweb green of Carrera's holomaps and geolocational models, was already waking up to the answer. I could feel the pre-knowledge trickling down the gullies of my mind like the detritus ahead of a major rockfall.
Tanya Wardani got there just ahead of me.
"It's Sauberville,"
she said flatly.
"Isn't it?"
Hand had the good grace to look embarrassed. "That is correct, Mistress Wardani. The MAI posits a 50% likelihood that Sauberville will be tactically reduced within the next 2 weeks." A small, peculiar chill fell into the air, and the look that passed from Schneider to Wardani and back to me felt like current. Sauberville had a population of 120,000.
"Reduced how?" I asked.
Hand shrugged.
"It depends on who does it.
If it's the cartel, they'll probably use one of their CP orbital guns. Relatively clean, so it doesn't inconvenience your friends in the wedge if they fight their way through this far. If Kemp does it, he won't be so subtle. Also clean."
"Tactical nuke," Schneider said tonelessly. "Riding a marauder delivery system."
"Well, it's what he's got." Hand shrugged again. "And to be honest, if he has to do it, he won't want a clean blast anyway. He'll be falling back, trying to leave the whole peninsula too contaminated for the cartel to occupy."
I nodded. "Yeah, that makes sense. He did the same thing at Evenfall."
"Motherfucking psycho,"
said Schneider, apparently to the sky.
Tanya Wardani said nothing, but she looked as if she were trying to loosen a piece of meat trapped between her teeth with her tongue.
"So..."
Han's tone shifted up into a forced briskness.
"Mistress Wardani, you are going to show us something, I believe."
Wardani turned away.
"It's down on the beach,"
she said. The path we were following wound its way around one of the bays and ended at a small overhang that had collapsed into a cone of shattered rock spilling down to the pale blue-shaded sand. Wardani jumped down with a practiced flex in her legs and trudged across the beach to where the rocks were larger and the overhangs towered at 5 times head height. I went after her, scanning the rise of land behind us with professional unease. The rock faces triangled back to form a long, shallow, Pythagorean alcove about the size of the hospital shuttle deck I'd met Schneider on. Most of the space was filled with a fall of huge boulders and jagged fragments of rock. We assembled around Tanya Wardani's motionless figure. She was faced off against the tumbled rock like a platoon scout on point.
"That's it,"
she nodded ahead.
"That's where we buried it."
"Buried it?" Matthias Hand looked around at the three of us with an expression that under other circumstances might have been comical. "How exactly did you bury it?"
Schneider gestured at the fall of debris and the raw rock face behind it.
Use your eyes, man. How do you think?
You blew it up.
Board charges.
Schneider was obviously enjoying himself.
2 meters in, all the way up.
You should have seen it go.
You.
Han's mouth sculpted the words as if they were unfamiliar.
Blew up. An artifact. Oh, for God's sake, Han.
Wardani was looking at him in open irritation.
Where do you think we found the fucking thing in the first place? This whole cliff wall came down on it 50,000 years ago. And when we dug it up, it was still in working order. It's not a piece of pottery. This is hyper-technology we're talking about. Built to last.
I hope you're right. Han walked about the skirts of the rockfall, peering in between the larger cracks. Because Mandrake isn't going to pay you 20 million U.N. dollars for damaged goods. What brought the rock down? I asked suddenly. Schneider turned, grinning.
I told you, man. Bored.
No. I was looking at Tiny Wardani. I mean, originally. These are some of the oldest rocks on the planet. There hasn't been any serious geological activity up in the rim for a lot longer than 50,000 years. And the sea sure as hell didn't do it, because that would mean this beach was created by the fall. Which puts the original construction underwater. And why would the Martians do that? So, what happened here 50,000 years ago?
Yeah, Tanya.
Schneider nodded vigorously.
You never did nail that one, did you? I mean, we talked about it, but...
It's a good point. Matthias Hand had paused in his explorations and was back with us. What kind of explanation do you have for this, Mistress Wardani? The archaeologue looked around at the three men surrounding her and coughed up a laugh.
Well, I didn't do it, I assure you.
I picked up on the configuration we'd unconsciously taken around her, and broke it by moving to seat myself on a flat slab of rock. Yeah, it was a bit before your time, I'd agree. But you were digging for months here. You must have some ideas.
Yeah, tell them about the leakage thing, Tanya.
Leakage? Hand asked dubiously. Wardani shot Schneider an exasperated glance. She found a rock of her own to sit on and produced cigarettes from her coat that looked suspiciously like the ones I'd bought that morning. Landfall lights, about the best smoking that money could buy now that Indigo City cigars were outlawed. Tapping one free of the pack, she rolled it in her fingers and frowned.
Look,
she said finally,
this gate is as far ahead of any technology we have as a submarine is ahead of a canoe. We know what it does. At least we know one thing that it does. Unfortunately, we don't have the faintest idea how it does it. I'm just guessing.
When no one said anything to contradict this, she looked up from the cigarette and sighed.
All right. How long does a heavy-load hypercast usually last? I'm talking about a multiple DHF needlecast transmission. 30 seconds? Something like that? A minute absolute maximum? And to open and hold that needlecast hyperlink takes the full capacity of our best conversion reactors.
She put the cigarette in her mouth and applied the end to the ignition patch on the side of the packet. Smoke ribboned off into the wind.
Now, when we opened the gate last time, we could see through to the other side. You're talking about a stable image, meters wide, infinitely maintained. In hypercast terms, that's infinite stable transmission of the data contained in that image. The photon value of each star in the star field, and the coordinates it occupied, updated second by second in real time, for as long as you care to keep the gate up and running. In our case, that was a couple of days, about 40 hours. That's 2,400 minutes, 2,500 times the duration of the longest needlecast hyperlink event we can generate. And no sign that the gate was ever running at anything other than standby. Begin to get the idea?
A lot of energy, Han said impatiently.
So what's this about leakage? Well, I'm trying to imagine what a glitch in a system like that would look like. Run any kind of transmission for long enough and you'll get interference. That's an unavoidable fact of life in a chaotic cosmos. We know it happens with radio transmission, but so far we haven't seen it happen to a hypercast.
Maybe that's because there's no interference in hyperspace, Mistress Wardani. just like it says in the textbooks.
Yeah, maybe.
Wardani blew smoke disinterestedly in Han's direction.
And maybe it's because we've been lucky so far. Statistically, it wouldn't be all that surprising. We've been doing this for less than 5 centuries, and with an average cast duration of a few seconds, well, it doesn't add up to much airtime. But if the Martians were running gates like these on a regular basis, their exposure time would be way up on ours. And given a civilization with millennial hyper-technology, you'd have to expect an occasional blip. The problem is that with the energy levels we're talking about, a blip coming through this gate would probably be enough to crack the planet's crust wide open.
Oops. The archaeologue flicked me a glance, not much less dismissive than the exhaled smoke she'd pushed at Han's protectorate-sanctioned schoolroom physics.
Quite,
she said acidly.
Oops. Now, the Martians weren't stupid. If their technology was susceptible to this sort of thing, they'd build in a failsafe. Something like a circuit breaker.
I nodded. So the gate shuts down automatically at this surge, and buries itself under 500,000 tons of cliff face? As a safety measure, that seems a little counterproductive, if you don't mind me saying so, Mr. Swardani. The archaeologue made an irritable gesture.
I'm not saying it was intended to happen that way, but if the power surge was extreme, the circuit breaker might not have operated fast enough to damp down the whole thing.
Or, Schneider said brightly, it could just have been a micrometeorite that crashed the gate. That was my theory. This thing was looking out into deep space, after all. No telling what might come zipping through, given enough time, is there?
We already talked about this, Jan.
Wardani's irritation was still there, but tinged this time with the exasperation of long dispute.
It's not...
It's possible, all right.
Yes, it's just not very likely.
She turned away from Schneider and faced me.
It's hard to be sure. A lot of the glyphs were like nothing I'd ever seen before, and they're hard to read, but I'm pretty certain there's a power break built in. Above certain velocities, nothing gets through.
You don't know that for certain. Schneider was sulking. You said yourself you couldn't...
Yes, but it makes sense, Jan. You don't build a door into hard space without some kind of safeguard against the junk you're likely to find out there.
Oh, come on, Tanya, what about... Lieutenant Kovach, Han said loudly. Perhaps you could come with me down to the shoreline. I'd like a military perspective on the outlying area, if you wouldn't mind. Sure. We left Wardani and Schneider bickering among the rocks and set out across the expanse of blued sand at a pace dictated largely by Han's shoes. To begin with, neither of us had anything to say, and the only sounds were the quiet compression of our steps and the yielding surface underfoot and the idle lapping of the sea. Then... out of nowhere, Han spoke.
Remarkable woman, I grunted. I mean, to survive a government internment camp with so little apparent scarring, that alone must have taken a tremendous effort of will. And now, to be facing the rigors of technoglyph operational sequencing so soon...
She'll be fine, I said shortly.
Yes, I'm sure she will. A delicate pause. I can see why Schneider is so burned on her.
That's over, I think.
Oh, really? There was a fractional amusement buried in his tone. I shot him a narrow sideways glance, but his expression was blank, and he was looking carefully ahead at the sea.
About this military perspective, Han?
Oh, yes. The Mandrake exec stopped a few meters short of the placid ripples that passed for waves on Sanction 4 and turned about. He gestured at the folds of land rising behind us. I am not a soldier, but I would hazard a guess that this isn't ideal fighting ground.
Got it in one.
I scanned the beach end to end, looking vainly for something that might cheer me up.
Once we get down here, we're a floating target for anyone on the high ground with anything more substantial than a sharp stick. It's an open field of fire right back to the foothills.
And then there's the sea.
And then there's the sea, I echoed gloomily. We're open to fire from anyone who can muster a fast assault launch. Whatever we have to do here, we'll need a small army to keep us covered while we do it. That's unless we can do this with a straight recon. Fly in, take pictures, fly out.
Hmm. Matthias Hand squatted and stared out over the water pensively. I've talked to the lawyers. Did you disinfect afterward? Under incorporation charter law, ownership of any artifact in non-orbital space is only considered valid if a fully operational claim buoy is placed within 1 kilometer of said artifact. No loopholes. We've looked. If there's a starship on the other side of this gate, we're going to have to go through and tag it. And from what Mistress Wardani says, that's going to take some time. I shrugged. A small army, then. A small army is going to attract a lot of attention. It'll show up on satellite tracking like a hollow whore's chest. And we really can't afford that, can we? A hollow whore's chest? I don't know. The surgery can't be that expensive. Hand cocked his head up to stare at me for a moment, then emitted an unwilling chuckle. Very droll. Thank you. We can't really afford to be satellite tagged, can we? Not if you want an exclusive. I think that goes without saying, Lieutenant. Hand reached down and idly traced a pattern on the sand with his fingers. So then, we have to go in small and tight and not make too much noise, which in turn means this area has to be cleared of operational personnel for the duration of our visit. If we want to come out alive, yes. Yes. Unexpectedly, Hand rocked back on his heels and dumped himself into a sitting position on the sand. He rested his forearms on his knees and seemed lost in searching the horizon for something. In the dark executive suit and white-winged collar, he looked like a sketch by one of the Millsport Absurdist School. "Tell me, Lieutenant," he said finally. "Assuming we can get the peninsula cleared, in your professional opinion, what's the lower limit on a support team for this venture? How few can we get away with?" I thought about it. "If they're good, spec ops, not just plankton standard grunts, say 6. 5 if you use Schneider as a flyer. Well, he doesn't strike me as the sort to be left behind while we look after his investment for him." "No." "You said spec ops. Do you have any specific skills in mind?" "Not really. Demolitions, maybe. That rockfall looks pretty solid. And it wouldn't hurt if a couple of them could fly a shuttle just in case something happens to Schneider." Hand twisted his head around to look up at me. "Is that likely?" "Who knows?" I shrugged. "Dangerous world out there." "Indeed." Hand went back to watching the place with a seam at the gray of Sabreville's undecided fate. "I take it you'll want to do the recruiting yourself?" "No, you can run it. But I want to sit in, and I want veto on anyone you select. You got any idea where you're going to get a half dozen spec ops volunteers? Without ringing any alarm bells, I mean?" For a moment, I thought he hadn't heard me. The horizon seemed to have him body and soul. Then he shifted slightly, and a smile touched the corners of his mouth. "In these troubled times," he murmured, almost to himself, "it shouldn't be a problem finding soldiers who won't be missed." "Glad to hear it." He glanced up again, and there were still traces of the smile clinging to his mouth. "Does that offend you, Kovach?" "You think I'd be a lieutenant in Carrera's Wedge if I offended that easily?" "I don't know." Hand looked back out to the horizon again. "You've been full of surprises so far. And I understand that envoys are generally pretty good at adaptive camouflage. So, less than 2 full days since the meeting in the auction hall, and Hand had already penetrated the Wedge data core and unpicked whatever shielding Carrera had applied to my envoy past. He was just letting me know. I lowered myself to the blued sand beside him and picked my own point on the horizon to stare at. "I'm not an envoy anymore." "No, so I understand." He didn't look at me. "No longer an envoy. No longer in Carrera's Wedge. This rejection of groupings is verging on pathological, Lieutenant." "There's no verging about it." "Ah, I see some evidence of your Harlan's World origins emerging. The essential evil of massed humanity. Wasn't that what Quell called it?"
"I'm not a Quellist, Hand."
"Of course not." The Mandrake exec appeared to be enjoying himself. "That would necessitate being part of a group. Tell me, Kovach, do you hate me?"
"Not yet."
"Really?
You surprise me." "Well, I'm full of surprises."
You honestly have no feelings of rancor toward me after your little run-in with Ding and his squad? I shrugged again. They're the ones with the added ventilation.
But I sent them.
All that shows is a lack of imagination. I sighed. Look, Hand, I knew someone in Mandrake would send a squad because that's the way organizations like yours work. That proposal we sent you was practically a dare to come and get us. We could have been more careful, tried a less direct approach, but we didn't have the time. So I flashed my fish cakes under the local bully's nose and got into a fight as a result. Hating you for that would be like hating the bully's wrist bones for a punch that I ducked. It served its purpose, and here we are. I don't hate you personally, because you haven't given me any reason to yet.
But you hate Mandrake.
I shook my head. I don't have the energy to hate the corporate's Hand. Where would I start? And like Quell says, rip open the diseased heart of a corporation and what spills out?
People.
That's right, people. It's all people. People and their stupid fucking groups. Show me an individual decision-maker whose decisions have harmed me, and I'll melt his stack to slag. Show me a group with the united purpose of harming me, and I'll take them all down if I can, but don't expect me to waste time and effort on abstract hate.
How very balanced of you.
Your government would call it antisocial derangement and put me in a camp for it.
Hand's lip curled. Not my government. We're just wet-nursing these clowns till Kemp calms down.
Why bother? Can't you deal direct with Kemp?
I wasn't looking, but I got the sense that his gaze had jerked sideways as I said it. It took him a while to formulate a response he was happy with. Kemp is a crusader, he said finally. He has surrounded himself with others like him, and crusaders do not generally see sense until they are nailed to it. The Kempists will have to be defeated, bloodily and resoundingly, before they can be brought to the negotiating table. I grinned.
So you've tried.
I didn't say that.
No, you didn't. I found a violet pebble in the sand and tossed it into the placid ripples in front of me. Time to change the subject.
You didn't say we were going to get our spec ops escort, either.
Can't you guess?
The soul market?
Do you have a problem with that?
I shook my head, but inside me something smoked off the detachment like stubborn embers.
By the way, Hand twisted around to look back at the rockfall. I have an alternate explanation for that collapsed cliff.
You didn't buy the micrometeorite, then?
I am inclined to believe in Mistress Wardani's velocity break. It makes sense, as does her circuit breaker theory to a point.
That point being?
That if a race, as advanced as the Martians appear to have been, built a circuit breaker, it would work properly. It would not leak.
No.
So, we are left with a question. Why, 50,000 years ago, did this cliff collapse? Or perhaps, why was it collapsed?
I groped around for another pebble. Yeah, I wondered about that.
An open door to any given set of coordinates across interplanetary, possibly even interstellar distances. That's dangerous, conceptually and in fact. There's no telling what might come through a door like that. Ghosts, aliens, monsters with half-meter fangs. He glanced sideways at me. Quellists, even. I found a second, larger stone somewhere back behind me.
Now that would be bad, I agreed, heaving my find far out into the sea.
The end of civilization as we know it.
Precisely. Something that the Martians, no doubt, also thought of and built for. Along with the power break and the circuit breaker, they would presumably have a monster with half-meter fangs contingency system. From somewhere, Hand produced a pebble of his own and spun it out over the water. It was a good throw from a seated position, but it still felt a little short of the ripples I had created with my last stone. Wedge-customized Nurikem. Hard to beat. Han clucked in disappointment.
That's some contingency system, I said. Bury your gate under 500,000 tons of cliff face.
Yes.
He was still frowning at the impact site of his throw, watching as his ripples merged with mine.
It makes you wonder what they were trying to shut out, doesn't it?
Chapter 11.
You like him, don't you?
It was an accusation, dealt face up in the low gleam from the muffled aluminum bar top. Music twanged, irritatingly sweet, from speakers not nearly high enough above our heads. Crouched at my elbow like a large comatose beetle, the personal space resonance scrambler that Mandrake had insisted we carry at all times showed a clear green functioning light, but apparently wasn't up to screening out external noise. Pity. Like who? I asked, turning to face Wardani.
Don't be obtuse, Kovach. That slick streak of used coolant in a suit. You're fucking bonding with him.
I felt the corner of my mouth quirk. If Tanya Wardani's archaeologue lectures had seeped into some of Schneider's speech patterns during their previous association, it looked as if the pilot had given as good as he'd gotten. He's our sponsor, Wardani. What do you want me to do? Spit at him every 10 minutes to remind us all how morally superior we are? I tugged significantly at the shoulder flash of the wedge uniform I was wearing. I'm a paid killer. Schneider here is a deserter. And you, whatever your sins may or may not be, are encoded all the way with us in trading the greatest archaeological find of the millennium for a ticket off world and a lifetime pass to all the ruling elite fun park ventures in Latimer City. She flinched.
He tried to have us killed.
Well, given the outcome, I'm inclined to forgive him that one. Deng's goon squad are the ones who ought to be feeling aggrieved. Schneider laughed, then shut up as Wardani cut him a freezing stare.
Yes, that's right. He sent those men to their deaths, and now he's cutting a deal with the man who killed them. He's a piece of shit.
If the worst hand ever scores is 8 men sent to their deaths, I said, more roughly than I'd intended, then he's a lot cleaner than me, or anyone else with a rank that I've met recently.
You see, you're defending him. You use your own self-hatred to let him slide off the scope and save yourself a moral judgment.
I looked hard at her, then drained my shot glass and set it aside with exaggerated care. I appreciate, I said evenly, that you've been through a lot recently, Wardani. That's why I'm cutting you some slack. But you're not an expert on the inside of my head, so I'd prefer it if you'd keep your fucking amateur psychosurgeon bullshit to yourself, okay? Wardani's mouth compressed to a thin line.
The fact remains...
Guys? Schneider leaned across Wardani with a rum bottle and filled my glass. Guys, this is supposed to be a celebration. If you want to fight, go north where it's popular. Right here, right now, I'm celebrating the fact that I won't ever have to get in a fight again. And you two are spoiling my run-up. Tanya, why don't you... He tried to top off Wardani's glass, but she pushed the neck of the bottle aside with the edge of one hand. She was looking at him with a contempt that made me wince.
That's all that matters to you, Jan, isn't it? She said in a low voice. Sliding out from under with heavy credit. The quick fix, shortcut, easy solution route to some swimming pool existence at the top of the pile. What happened to you, Jan? I mean, you were always shallow, but...
She gestured helplessly.
Thanks, Tanya.
Schneider knocked back his shot, and when I could see his face again, he was grinning fiercely.
You're right. I shouldn't be so selfish. I ought to have stuck with Kemp for a while longer. After all, what's the worst that can happen? Don't be childish. No, really, I see it all so much more clearly now. Takashi, let's go tell Hand we've changed our minds. Let's all go down fighting. It's so much more significant.
He stabbed a finger at Wardani.
And you can go back to the camp we pulled you out of, because I wouldn't want you to miss out on any of this noble suffering. You pulled me out of the camp because you needed me, Jan, so don't pretend any different.
Schneider's open hand was well into the swing before I realized he intended to hit her. My Nurikem-aided responses got me there in time to lock down the slap, but I had to lunge across Wardani to do it, and my shoulder must have knocked her off the stool. I heard her yelp as she hit the floor. Her drink went over and spilled across the bar.
That's enough,
I told Schneider quietly. I had his forearm flattened to the bar under mine, and my other hand floating in a loose fist back at my left ear. My face was close enough to his to see the faint tear sheen on his eyes. I thought you didn't want to fight anymore.
Yeah.
It came out strangled. He cleared his throat.
Yeah, that's right.
I felt him relax and unlocked on his arm. Turning, I saw Wardani picking her stool and herself up from the floor. Behind her, a few of the bar's table occupants had come to their feet and were watching uncertainly. I met their eyes, and they seated themselves hurriedly. A graft-heavy tactical marine in one corner lasted longer than the rest, but in the end, even she sat down, unwilling to tussle with the wedge uniform. Behind me, I felt more than saw the bartender clearing up the spilled drink. I leaned back on the newly dried surface.
I think we'd better all calm down. Agreed?
Suits me.
The archaeologue set her stool back on its feet.
You're the one who knocked me over. You and your wrestling partner.
Schneider had hooked the bottle and was pouring himself another shot. He downed it and pointed at Wardani with the empty glass.
You want to know what happened to me, Tanya? You... I have a feeling you're going to tell me. Really want to know? I got to watch a 6-year-old girl fucking die of shrapnel. Fucking shrapnel wounds that I fucking inflicted because she was hiding in an automated bunker I rolled fucking grenades into.
He blinked and trickled more rum into his glass.
And I'm not going to fucking watch anything like that ever again. I'm out, whatever it takes. However shallow that makes me. For your fucking information.
He looked back and forth between us for a couple of seconds, as if he couldn't honestly remember who either of us was. Then he got off his stool and walked an almost straight line to the door and out. His last drink stood untouched on the muted glow of the bar top.
Ah, shit,
said Wardani, into the small silence left beside the drink. She was peering into her own empty glass, as if there might be an escape hatch at the bottom. Yeah. I wasn't about to help her get off the hook with this one.
You think I should go after him?
Not really, no. She put down the glass and fumbled for cigarettes. The landfall lights pack I'd noticed in the virtuality came out, and she fed herself one mechanically.
I didn't mean...
No, I thought she probably didn't. So will he once he sobers up. Don't worry about it. He's most likely been carrying that memory around in seal wrap since it happened. You just fed him enough catalyst to vomit it up. It's probably better that way. She breathed the cigarette into life and glanced sideways at me through the smoke.
Does none of this touch you anymore?
She asked.
How long does it take to get like that?
Thank the envoys. It's their specialty. How long is a meaningless question. It's a system. Psychodynamic engineering. This time she turned on her stool and stayed facing me.
Doesn't that ever make you angry? That you've been tampered with like that?
I reached across for the bottle and topped off both our drinks. She made no move to stop me. When I was younger, I didn't care. In fact, I thought it was great. A testosterone wet dream. See, before the envoys, I served in the regular forces, and I'd already used a lot of quick-plant jack-in software. This just seemed like a super-ramped version of the same thing. Body armor for the soul. And by the time I got old enough to think any differently, the conditioning was in to stay.
You can't beat it? The conditioning?
I shrugged. Most of the time I don't want to. That's the nature of good conditioning. And this is a very superior product. I work better when I go with it. Fighting it is hard work, and it slows me down. Where did you get those cigarettes?
These?
She looked down at the pack absently.
Oh, Jan, I think. Yeah, he gave them to me.
That was nice of him. If she noticed the sarcasm in my voice, she didn't react.
You want one?
Why not? By the look of it, I'm not going to be needing the sleeve much longer.
You really think we're going to get as far as Latimer City?
She watched me shake out a cigarette and draw it to life.
You trust Han to keep his side of this bargain?
There's really very little point in him double-crossing us. I exhaled and stared at the smoke as it drifted away across the bar. A massive sense of departure from something was coursing unlooked for through my mind, a sense of unnamed loss. I groped after the words to sew everything back together again. The money's already gone. Mandrake can't get it back. So if it cuts us out, all Han saves himself is the cost of the hypercast and 3 off-the-rack sleeves. in return for which he gets to worry forever about automated reprisals. Ordani's gaze dropped to the resonance scrambler on the bar.
Are you sure this thing is clean?
Nope. I got it from an indie dealer. But she came Mandrake recommended, so it could be tagged for all I know. It doesn't really matter. I'm the only person who knows how the reprisals are set up, and I'm not